It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 23rd of August 2014. Island Life is Waiheke Island's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday from 10 till 12 with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua. On Saturday the 23rd of August, Gary Bell spoke with Sarah Braid from the SVCA, Grant Lilly from the Prostate Cancer Support Group. He talked about the Health Trust with David Basham, and he had Emma in to share some recipes.
Gives me great pleasure to introduce our first guest, and that is Sarah Braid from the SPCA. Hi, Sarah. How are you this morning?
Hello. I'm good. I'm fantastic. It's a beautiful day out there. I'm so happy to see that.
Oh, it's a stunner, isn't it? And you have come along today to fill us in on all sorts of things that have been happening with the RSPCA on the island.
Yeah, that's right. We've got a couple of events coming up. And, just to come and introduce myself and hopefully we can talk about some cats in the future too.
Well, that sounds actually really, really good. Well, look, I understand that you have a cupcake day that's happening right now. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, I sure can. Cupcake Day is a fun, community-driven annual fundraiser for our little Waiheke Island SPCA. And I don't know, this is just a little bit of background, but the SPCA actually operates individually, so we don't operate as one big organisation where all our funds go together and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So we're out there with Cupcake Day, which is this Monday, the 25th of August, to raise money specifically for the Waiheke Island SPCA to keep the services here and to keep the centre running.
Right.
Cupcake Day is about raising the money to continue the fight against animal cruelty with sweet and hopefully delicious cupcakes, which are all lovingly baked by some of our volunteers. The SPCA receives no government funding, so money must be raised.
Right.
We think there's also a need to keep our SPCA animal inspector and the animal centre here on Waiheke Island. Because if we go, then it's left up to Auckland, who really, really already have their hands full.
So is there some question mark around that? Is there something possibly to occur that might affect that?
We've actually just had something really sad happen about a week ago, which has really put us back and put us in a bit of danger.
Yes.
And losing our centre, and that's where we were robbed.
Yeah, I saw that. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. That's really set us back. I mean, we're such a small centre here on the island, and we don't get a lot of support from the other centres and head office that we're surviving by ourselves to run the business.
Right.
We're the only SPCA in New Zealand that is a centre with the op shop attached to it as well.
Oh, really?
The op shop at the moment is pretty much all our income.
Wow, okay.
And there's a lot of costs involved in obviously just having a shop and a centre and a van and an inspector and a manager.
Yes.
And also all the vet bills that come in. There's a lot of costs associated with every animal that we come into contact with.
Yes.
Even from the moment we send an inspector out to do a house call and visit. So yeah, we really need to keep that going. We need to make as much money as we possibly can.
Yes.
We've got two fundraisers each year where we go out to the public and say, come on, help us out.
Right.
And one of them is this Cupcake Day this Monday. And the other one, which is coming up in the near future, is Paws Appeal Week, which is specifically for raising money for prosecuting animal cruelty.
Well, I'm a great believer in that people should be absolutely hammered very, very hard for any kind of animal cruelty. I just find it abhorrent. In some ways, I don't know what it is with me, but some ways I find it more difficult to read about an animal getting a hard time than a person. I know that doesn't seem quite right, but it's the way my brain works for some reason. Now, Sarah, you wanted to talk about some possible adoptees that you have there looking for a good home.
Yes, we have three adult cats looking for their forever homes. So if you're looking for a companion or a new best buddy, come down to the SPCA Centre and check out the cats that we do have. We have two boys and a girl. And they are Millie, Mert, and Bert.
Nice.
And we had Mert because when he first came in, we weren't sure whether he was going to be a boy or a girl.
Oh, really?
So Mert could go either way.
Mert. Yeah, sure. Pretty hard when they pretty
or
hard
Myrtle.
To tell them, yeah. Myrtle. Yeah, good call.
They're all very, very friendly cats.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yes.
I don't know the full stories behind how they came in, but it hasn't affected them whatsoever. They're the most cuddliest cats I've sort of come across at the SPCA. Millie's definitely one we would love, love, love to find her forever home as soon as possible.
Yes.
She has been with us for some time. And, of course, you know, we do have the animals in cages to keep them safe, but it's not really the optimal place for them to be. And Millie's ready to go for a run. She needs to get out. And, you know, just to be but honest, she probably does need to go for a few runs because she's a little bit round.
So she's enjoying the good life at the SPCA a bit too much.
Yeah, she's not doing a lot at the moment other than just sort of like curling up and lying and stretching and sunbathing and things like that.
Well, that sounds like the typical cat to me. I've had many cats. When I was growing up, we had six cats at one stage. We were on a farm and you know, it was never a dull moment. It was a wee bit like a version of Foot Rot Flats there some days. I mean, honestly, you know, that's typical behaviour, isn't it? A full tummy, scratch on the nose, and just a bit of a chase a bird now and then. It must be a pretty stressful lifestyle, I reckon.
Yeah,
being a cat.
We just love to give them as much cuddles as what they'd get, you know, if they had their own one human to themselves, you know. But we're also trying to sort through a lot of donations, so we'd love to see them go to a good home. Lovely cats, so come down. We're open between 9 and 4 p.m.
yes.
Monday to Friday, and then 9 till 2 p.m. on Saturdays. Probably know where we are.
Yes, I've seen where you are there, but you could give us the, you know, maybe we're up around the, I've gone blank myself, but that's okay. Everyone knows where the SPCA is. I can't remember the name of the road myself. I only drive down it every day. How can people help with fundraising and with Cupcake Day, perhaps?
Well, of course, anyone can come down to the centre at any time and throw money at us.
Yes, excellent. Yes,
we're not fussy. But specifically in the next few days, we want people to come and buy some cupcakes.
Right. Nice.
Today, right now, we are down at the Ostend Markets.
Yes, yes.
We've got a little stall there, and you can see pictures and profiles of the cats that we have up for adoption.
Nice.
We've got big platters of cupcakes.
Fantastic.
Cupcakes are all $3 each, or if you want to give us more, then we're never going to say no. You're not wanting to have a cupcake, there's lots of stickers.
Oh, fantastic. If people want to get involved with the SPCA and be a volunteer, are you looking for any additional support at the moment?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We are in urgent need of volunteers, people to just man the op shop to help us out.
Right.
You know, it's kind of not the best time spent for the centre manager just to be managing the op shop.
Yes.
Because she's got so many other things that need to be done for the centre.
Yes, yes.
So more hands the merrier. We are definitely looking for volunteers. If you can give any time, the most important thing is consistency rather than the amount of time given.
Yes.
So if you were able to only do a couple of hours, but you're able to do it every week, we could count on someone, a pair of hands being there, that would be fantastic. But hey, you know, if you can do a whole day, that would be just awesome.
Awesome. Well, look, hopefully somebody out there is thinking, hey, you know what, it's just what I need to fill in a bit of time, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of people on the island that have got that spare time. Given the work-life balance, it seems to be quite prevalent on the island from what I've seen. So with regard to the animals, when you actually, say I go into the SPCA and I think, oh, I like that little cat or that little dog or whatever, what sort of process do you have to go through before you can take that animal home with you?
It's pretty easy. We just have a little bit of a meet and greet. We do have a bit of an application process.
Yes, yes.
But it's not very difficult.
It's pretty quick.
You can put all the cats are ready to go.
Right.
They're all de-sexed, microchipped.
Okay.
Vaccinated. Yep. Vet checked. Health checked. Anything needing to be done has been done.
Great.
So you literally, if we think you're okay and you're a nice person and you can give that cat a good home, just through a series of questions and getting to know you and asking a bit about your housing and lifestyle and stuff like that, then we'll pop your little cat into your carry cage and say, here's some food, have some fun, see you later.
Oh, nice. That sounds really, really nice, actually. And what sorts of animals do you have down there, generally speaking? Is it mainly cats and dogs, or do you have other types of animals as well?
Oh, we get all sorts come through the centre.
So what's some of the unusual animals that you've had, do you reckon?
Well, probably a lot of people will actually remember we had Andy, the cockatoo.
Oh, nice. Okay.
For a while there.
Yeah.
We've had guinea pigs, rabbits, turtles.
Right.
Chickens, roosters, all sorts of...
All sorts, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we majority... of the time we get cats coming through. Well, that's what you'll see in our cages.
Yes.
But obviously we'd take any animal that needed help, and it was a welfare issue.
And do you find that there's any seasonal fluctuations in the numbers of animals that come to the SPCA?
Definitely kitten season. We get a lot of kittens sort of 1 to 2 times a year when they're in season, and you'll just get batches of them. All of a sudden, you'll have no cats. You're like, yes, numbers are down. All our cats have been adopted. They've been rehomed, and then, boom, you know, 6, 8 kittens come in all at once. And they all need to be taken care of. You know, they've all got their own. They all need to be seen by a vet.
Yes.
Eventually de-sexed.
Yes.
We need to house them and give them food for the amount of time it takes them just to be ready for it to be adopted.
Yes.
And then, after that.
Well, I mean, come on, folks. We all know what we need to do. How much? What's the sort of cost to de-sex a female cat anyway? What would that cost be? Do you know off the top of your head what people would be looking at?
I believe it's around about $120.
Uh-huh.
So if you've got 8 kittens to go
expensive,
all at once,
isn't it?
It just creeps up.
That's
so
probably
fast.
Really the issue, isn't it, for people? Yeah, it is. So I don't know what the answer is.
There's so many hidden costs. And, there's some cases that, you know, a lot of animals won't actually get to the front to be adopted.
Right.
It can be, you know, the issues or whatever around the situation can be resolved, so you don't actually see the animals that come through.
Oh, I see.
So there's a lot more animals that are coming through the centre other than the ones you're just seeing in the front cages.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a lot more hidden costs that, you know, the only way we can get those costs paid for is through our op shop.
Yes.
Fundraising.
Yes.
Through our annual Cupcake Day and Paws Appeal.
Nice.
And also the other thing that we really want to encourage people to do is sign up and become a member.
Oh yeah, okay.
Which is so cheap.
Yes.
Ridiculously cheap. I can't believe it.
Yeah. What do you pay for that? What do you pay for the that membership?
$5.
Really, that is ridiculously cheap, isn't it?
That's annually. That's not monthly. That's just once a year.
Yeah.
That's $5 for a family if you want to join
up. Is that right? Gee.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's a lot of things For that $5, it'll just be an online monthly newsletter, just keeping you updated on centre news and what's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
But that money will go towards so many things within the centre.
Well, certainly. Now, just to wrap up things from the SPCA, Sarah, you just had a few final comments and information for us before we go today.
Yeah, just two things really. So everything we've just spoken about, if you want to get involved, if you want to donate, please just jump on the Facebook page, Waiheke Island SPCA, or jump on our website, waihekespca.org.nz, and you'll find some more information there. Unfortunately, because we don't have a lot of money for flash tools for making it easy to pass money over, you will have to come down to the centre, which is at the intersection of Queens Drive, Pacific Parade and Junction Road, or 85 Pacific Parade. Come down and see us. Just say hi.
Nice.
I want to volunteer. I want to give you some money.
Yeah.
Anything like that. We just want to sign you up and get the community more involved and to help us out.
Yeah.
And then finally, another thing you can help us out with is giving money, buying cupcakes. This Monday, 25th of August, we will have volunteers at the Countdown supermarket positioned out there. Might have a couple of dogs down there, which would be awesome. Good for pets. And also we'll be on at Matiatia at the ferry building for the early morning commuter ferries, selling as many cupcakes. If we've got any cupcakes left, we'll be down in the afternoon as well. But hopefully we'll be all done and dusted. Cupcakes are $3 each, so make sure you've got some gold coins ready on Monday, no matter where you are, because it's a nationwide fundraiser, so you never know where you might be stopped by a cupcake seller. But of course, more money to stay on the island, the better.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, Sarah, look, you guys do a wonderful, wonderful job. I certainly know that, our dog at home, Baxter, he's a SPCA rescue pup from Christchurch, and we were living down there through all those unfortunate things that happened around earthquakes. And we, during our time there, we got Baxter, and he's been a wonderful, wonderful animal, and, you know, we wouldn't be without him. So, look, thanks once again. I know the animals that you guys rehome brings so much pleasure to people's lives, and they become part of the family pretty quickly. And I think there's something special about an SPCA animal. I think they've had a bit of a rough time, and I think they really appreciate, you know, the good life when they get it.
Yeah.
So thanks very much once again.
Cool. No, thank you for having me. Hope to come back soon.
Okay. You're very, very welcome. Thank you, Sarah.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Island, art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
My next guest, Mr. Grant Lilly. Grant is actually involved in the Island Prostate Cancer Support Group and has taken some time today to come in and give us a little bit of information around what the group's about and what some of the activities are and how people can get involved. So, look, welcome, Grant, and thank you for coming in today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yep. Thank you. So tell me, Grant, at the moment, what are some of the activities that the group are involved in currently on the island?
Well, I have to say straight away that I've only put a feeler out at the moment.
Right.
Last week's was the second advert. I've got no structure as yet. I want to get as many people on a contact list,
yes,
emailing, and feel the response I get, and then set up. And I'd like to have an email list of and a meeting ever so often, feel what feedback I get from the advert.
Yes.
So at the moment, no activities, nothing's planned, but I'll get a feeling from the response I get.
Okay, so what was the driving force behind you deciding to form the support group?
Well, prostate cancer, as probably other cancers, is a bit of a maze when you're confronted with your diagnosis and the decisions you have to make and what outcomes. Side effects, collateral damage, and I think that it's best to talk to people that have been through it. I think you get better guidance from them, from the mistakes they make and the decisions, than you do from the medical profession, as I've experienced it so far.
Right, okay. So the incidence of this particular form of cancer in the country, are they very high?
Well, I haven't really researched it, but I do know that whenever you speak to somebody, somebody knows somebody who's got it.
Yes.
And apparently it is quite high. I think it's even more prevalent than breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a huge thing. Mm. I think probably too, I'm going to generalise here, but having falling into that demographic myself, I can speak from experience. We're hopeless at, often us blokes are hopeless at getting some kind of medical opinion on something that's not quite right, and we do tend to think, sometimes I think some of us tend to think, well, it'll come right or it'll be right or whatever. But so what are some of these signs, early signs of this form of cancer that people can keep an eye out for?
Well, I myself didn't have any early signs.
Right.
One hears that restricted flow,
yes,
of an expanded prostate affects, yes, the urethra.
Yes.
But my first inkling of it was when, on a general blood test, I had a PSA level that was slowly climbing to the extent that my GP said, look, we better go to the urologist and, yes, perhaps have a biopsy to see what's going on.
Yes, yes, I see. Okay. And what were the time frames around that? What was the time frame between when you saw your GP to when you first got your first assessment or review?
Well, before this interview, I was looking back in my notes to get some time frame, and I'd like to actually do a timeline. I will,
yes,
do.
Yes, please do.
But I haven't actually written it out now.
Sure.
But looking back in my notes, I see it was 2:04 that, first of all, there's the first inkling of a PSA reading, and it didn't seem to amount to much. Then it just slowly elevated to the point that Mike Carrotine, my doctor, said, better go and see a urologist,
right,
which led to a biopsy, and then it was all on the table.
Okay, I see. Okay. Certainly, it's good to profile this stuff, because I don't think a lot of men's health issues do get profiled to the same extent that other types of, types of conditions and types of illnesses do. Certainly, I know that we talk in general terms about cancer, and we hear a lot about bowel cancer and all those other, breast cancer, and all those other forms of cancer. But certainly, I think this is a bit of a hidden one in a lot of ways, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, I have heard of blokes saying, well, look, I'm not going to go for a test, well, even say for cholesterol, because I just don't want to know the answer. So I don't go for a test. It's a blind eye, head in the sand situation. But I think with prostate, as long as you're keeping your blood tests out and your PSA, you know what PSA means?
If you'd like to.
Yeah. PSA is the prostate-specific antigen. Now, the antigen,
right,
is fighting the tumour.
Yes.
If the reading is higher or creeping up, it's showing that the tumour is active. And that is what is the best judge of. But even so, it is not a golden measurement. we find that GPs will say, well, look, they're not that reliable. We have found it's not reliable. People with other symptoms haven't shown up on the PSA. I actually was managing my PSA, and I was dropping my PSA through a sort of a self-medication of hydrogen peroxide. I thought I was managing it. I went for the results of my MRI scan, and even though my PSA was dropping, the tumour was found to have been expanding. Right. So I wasted valuable time and being misled by the PSA. But the PSA is the only thing that one can judge. When my treatment is over, I'm currently being radiated.
Oh, okay.
They monitor your PSA to see if there's any activity still there, even though it might be very low. Right. But that's the only thing to go on, apart from the MRI scan when it's an expanded tumour.
So this form of cancer, is it particularly fast moving or fast developing?
Every case is different.
Okay.
Mine, actually, I've got on the notes that it was first seen as benign. Whatever that meant, I thought, oh, well, that's probably quite good news if it's benign, and I can just do a watch and wait way about it. But that was a mistake. I mean, my advice now is as soon as there's an inkling of it, snuff it out early.
Right.
Because I'm dealing with a bigger tumour and a bigger risk now.
Sure, sure. Okay, so if in doubt, I suppose the best thing to do is go and see your doctor straight away, go and see your GP.
Well, just do your regular blood tests, get the PSA thing, and as soon as there's an inkling of a PSA thing, look for treatment.
Okay. Okay, so getting back to Grant. Grant, once again, really good chatting to you today. Just a moment, please. I've just got a little technical issue here with some music, so we'll just sort of stop that because it's not supposed to be going over me like that. Okay. And so getting back to where we were before, talking about treatment options, Grant, what sort of treatment options are available for people out there, and what sort of choices do people have to make when they're presented with a raft of options for their own treatment?
Well, my GP referred me to the urologist as the first port of call. Now, the urologist is more directly involved with surgery, so option is presented to me first, and go away to think about it. And the surgery is the knife, the cutting through the urethra, the removal of the prostate,
yes,
you know, the heavy anaesthetic, the collateral damage. So that's one option. The next option was radiation. Now, the radiation is a more drawn-out process, and as it happens, that the collateral damage is similar, and it seems to boil down to 50-50, whether you have urinary problems or rectal problems or impotency problems.
Yes,
and
yes.
So one weighs all that up. And having spoken to somebody who took the surgery option, one that I wanted to avoid because I just had two intense surgery situations before, and the anaesthetic I never felt had hit me a bit. So
yes.
Once I'd heard the man that had taken the surgery option, he was not clear of it, and he then went through the radiation. So
right.
That seemed to put me in the mind of, I'll go radiation because to avoid the surgery, and the collateral damage was the same sort of risk. But when my MRI scan results came through, they delayed 6 weeks on it, which I was furious about, really, to give me a result. They found that it was actually almost in a sort of a danger situation, and I was, when I'd actually got to the radiation department, the urology department didn't put me on sort of like you're in a danger situation. They jacked me up with another interview with the radiation. The radiation lady said, no, we've got to give you an injection straight away, hormone injection. So currently I've had hormone injections, and I'm being radiation, and the radiation involves 37 trips to town on a daily basis, apart from weekends.
It's a heck of a lot.
But, you know, when you look at the rest of your life.
Exactly, that's right. Exactly right. So with the where you access the treatment and how the treatment is funded, are there options in the private medical sector for some of this?
There was another option that I'd been recommended by some friends in England that took it, which is the insertion of a radioactive seed into the prostate that is a continual action against the tumour.
Right.
This is only available on private.
Right.
And I heard some story about, well, you can't bounce your grandchildren on your knee if you've got this radioactive pellet in your prostate.
Now, is that called brachytherapy?
It's called brachytherapy.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah.
And some people really think that's the best option.
Right.
But as I say, it's every situation on its own merits, and you make the choice against what the collateral damage may be.
Okay. Now, folks, if you've got a pen and paper, can you just take a moment to go and get that pen and get that piece of paper and pop it down in front of you? Because what we're going to do is give you Grant's contact details, as Grant would obviously be very happy to hear from anyone that wants to know more or wants to become involved. So, Grant, we might just give out your details a couple of times. So could you provide them now, please?
My phone number, landline, 372-5638. My mobile is 021-0477-822. And I'd like to set up an email network. And my email address is lillyworks, LILLYWORX, at slingshot.co.nz. So I think an email would be good from anyone who's interested in joining the network. As I say, it's early stages, nothing's been formed. Yes. We'll discuss it and then set up a program.
Okay, so can we just have that email address one more time, please?
Okay, yes. Lillyworks, LILLYWORX, at slingshot.co.nz.
Lovely. Well, Grant, is there anything else you'd like to mention before we wrap it up today?
Well, I think that men should not be shy about talking about this. I mean, I can't understand anyone not wanting to talk about it and be informed, because being informed is making good decisions, and we are talking about your life expectancy here. So I do advise anyone with a situation to actually join the network and contribute and get some information.
Grant, thank you very much for that, and I'm sure it's going to go very well, and very much appreciate the way you're providing this great service to the island. Thanks very much.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
You are listening to Waiheke Radio, and this is Island Life. I'm David, and I'm sitting here with Gary, and part of being a community radio station is to let the people know in Waiheke just what is going on out in the world. And of course, Gary is a manager for the Health Trust. So what's been going on with the Health Trust?
Thanks, David. A couple of updates around some positive developments we've had lately. Some people out there may be aware that we had to temporarily cease providing X-ray services on the island because our previous medical radiology radiation technologist actually went to the mainland. And often what happens out here, we get good people over here, we train up and then they get shoulder tapped for the bigger, better deal on the mainland, which is absolutely fine. You know, if that's part of the role we play in the local health scene, then we kind of see that as a bit of a positive as well. But of course, it's always nice when people stick around for a while too. So, in saying that, Hins Joy was our previous X-ray guy, and he was wonderful. He was with us for a year, which was a good nudge for us, and he's moved on now. And they're having some really positive things, starting a new family, new job, and new house all at once. So it's all go for them. We've actually been fortunate to have our new person on board now. Her name is Sharla. Sharla's from Auckland. She's been doing some work with the ADHB previously and is now running our X-ray services for us. So luckily we only had about a week and a half where we had downtime on the X-rays, and we're now seeing people starting to flow back through the service now. In saying that, we would still want to see more volume there, because we think there are still some X-rays going off the island that ideally we could do here. And if anyone's got any inquiries about that, please just give us a call on the main line and we can provide you with some facts and background around how to access the X-ray services and what any costs might be. But certainly we are no more expensive than anybody on the mainland at all. Now moving forward from that as well, before I do, just to let you know that X-ray services are Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays. So we're back to where we were before. So
would people get their referral through the GP?
Yes, but also other allied health providers as well. So chiropractors and various other clinicians can also provide those referrals for people too. So it's not just GPs.
Right. Okay. I just thought it would be GPs.
No.
But of course, it's very different now. There's lots of allied medical services that are seen as mainstream now, whereas years ago they were not.
That's absolutely right. So, you know, if you're in any doubt, just ask your current medical provider, whoever they are you able to refer for an X-ray, or do I need to go through the GP? That's if they start talking about the fact that you might need one. Ideally, yeah. So, I mean, there are more than one ways to access our services. The other good news for the island is that we've managed to recruit a new doctor. He is due to start with us in a couple of weeks' time. So we're really looking forward to him coming on board. He's from the UK. His wife has also come over, and she works in Auckland in the Auckland DHB. So a bit of a medical family, and they're loving the idea of being associated with the Waiheke Island. So Alex Rose is his name, Dr. Alex Rose, and Alex starts with us in about a week and a half, 2 weeks' time. So that's quite a relief, because it's very difficult to find GPs for the island. Certainly, I guess I have to say we're still light on the ground on female GPs on the island, and for obvious reasons that can be a bit of an issue. I guess the fact is that every time we've applied, put an ad in the paper or tried to recruit, we haven't actually had any female doctors apply for whatever reason. In saying that, we have an absolutely awesome nursing team, and the female doctors that are still on the island are also equally as amazing and absolutely awesome. So, you know, the quality of services are still there, but it's just around perhaps people not being able to access those female clinicians when they were used to being able to access them before. There's just a little bit more planning involved, and maybe, you know, you might have to wait a day or two if it's nothing too urgent. And saying that to our nursing team, which is very ably led by Megan Yates. You know, we are talking about perhaps putting together clinics and talking with Rebecca Potts and the rest of our crew around how that might look going forward if we do have a special need for women's health clinics on the island outside of normal hours. So that's something we'd certainly consider.
Oh, that's a good positive move. That's very important, because I was just counting up the number of women doctors, and yes, it is great when you hear they've gone off to a very impoverished country and they're providing wonderful medical service. But it makes us a little impoverished too.
It does. It really, really does. And the impact is actually really significant. There's a lot of behind the scenes work that happens to try and fill those gaps when they happen. And you'd think that people would line up and want to come to a wonderful place like this. But, you know, when people have their family, their kids in school on the mainland, and their lives are there, and their partners' incomes might be there as well, you know, it's not just always that easy just to come over here.
No, it sounds like people, it's a great paradise, but work's important and travelling, and it's quite complex.
Oh, well it is. It really is. But we're getting there. Also, the home support team continue to do wonderful work, and they're actually, you know, I continue to get really positive feedback from the people that are using the service, just around the level of caring and the sincerity of the people and the service they're providing. And, you know, we get written feedback on a frequent basis and verbal as well. And it just reinforces what we already know, that our teams on the island are, and I'm not just talking about the Health Trust, I'm talking about Piritahi Aurora, I'm talking about the Onaroa Medical Centre, I'm talking about all the other providers right across the island, you know, the Red Cross people, the St. John's Ambulance, the helicopter pilot, everyone, you know, we're all a link in a chain and overall service, and I think everyone does an amazing job. And I'm sorry if I didn't mention your service scene, but you know who you are. You're all a big part of it. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, that's great news. Well, I'm glad you've got those fixed, because they can be a constant concern nagging away in your head all the time.
Oh, they are. And just to know that we've got the new GP on board and the x-rays now running is a huge relief, because you do lose a bit of sleep at night just worrying about, you know, having the x-ray, suddenly the x-ray wasn't there, and it really was a massive impact. Suddenly people are thinking, how do I get my x-rays? So it's a matter of, you know, getting to the ferry, getting on the mainland, waiting for an appointment, whereas here you can pretty much just walk straight in and get it. And the technology is such that we transmit that photograph straight to the Auckland Radiology Group. We have an alliance with them and an arrangement where They have a radiologist who will actually read the result and provide the report, and that's normally turned around within an hour, 2 hours at the most. That is. I don't know that people know that, but we have that result back on the island, 2 hours max. That's in the service spec, because I checked the contract the other day, and they continue to provide an excellent service for us. So for us to have our own radiologist to provide those reports on the island is cost prohibitive, because we don't have the volumes. And then there's another thing, I won't get into too much in the details, but it's called IANS accreditation. And that IANS accreditation means that we would also perhaps attract some other funding we're currently not tapping into. So we're looking into that, and we're hoping the ADHB can maybe assist us with some of that. But it's a wait and see at the moment. We're doing the best we can with what we've got.
Just thinking, while we're singing praises, as people know, I'm the manager of the Waiheke Island Supported Homes Trust. We've just finished our Ministry of Health audit, and we got another 3-year certification.
Oh, congratulations.
And there's 2-year and 3-year certification. 3 years is the top one, and this is the second year in a row that we've got a 3-year one, and I feel really good about that, because it's important to have that, because these days these things go on the net, and it's important that on Waiheke we are known for having high quality programs.
Well, you are, and there's one thing Waiheke is not short of, and that's quality services for people. The quality out here, I've been involved in other services in the past across the rest of the country, especially the South Island, and whilst I'm not saying anything negative about that, the quality here is just so consistently high across all the providers. It's just quite outstanding.
Mm. Well, I've had to access the nurses at the Ostend Medical Centre, and I've just been stunned at how competent they are, how relaxed they make you feel, and how they just got nice personalities that make it sound what they're doing. They obviously enjoying themselves.
Well, they do. They care, and the district nursing teams are a case in point. Where I just popped into the office this morning to pick up a couple of things, and one of our nurses was in there just beavering away, and nothing's too much of a hassle for them, because they're passionate and they care so much about the people they're providing services for. So it's nice. It's all part of the culture, isn't it?
It is, and that quality is so important. Well, that's great, Gary.
Okay. All right, well, thanks very much, David. And
Waiheke Radio.
Now, I've got Emma. Emma's come into the studio today to share with us some culinary treats that she's pulled together. So welcome, Emma.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And I have to admit that I've actually just tasted some of the actual results of your endeavours recently, and I have to say very, very nice, very tasty. Now, okay, so what have you got for us today?
Well, when I heard you talking to Sarah earlier on, I thought, I should have done cupcakes, but I didn't. I was watching Great British Bake Off a couple of weeks ago, and that inspired me to have a bit of a play around with cheesecake. And there are two kinds of cheesecake, set and baked. The baked are originally from Russia and Eastern Europe, and you might be surprised to know that they date from at least the early 1900s. And traditionally they used local soft cheese, sugar and eggs based in a pastry case. And that could have been a way of using up any leftovers before they went nasty. Set cheesecakes are a more recent American invention, and they normally use gelatin as the setting agent and have a base of pastry, crushed biscuits or sponge. So I've got two recipes for you today, one set and one baked. And the first one comes from the goddess of British baking herself, Mary Berry, and it's chocolate ripple cheesecake. So for the base, you need 100 grams of plain chocolate digestive biscuits that you've crushed. You can either crush them by putting them in a food processor, or if you want to have a bit of fun, put them in a plastic bag and set about them with a rolling pin. And you want 50 grams of melted butter. And for the topping, you need 150 grams of plain chocolate, which you've broken into pieces, 700 grams of full-fat soft cheese, 225 grams of caster sugar, half a teaspoon of vanilla essence, and 2 eggs. So you need to preheat your oven to about 160 and lightly grease a 20-centimetre loose-bottom cake tin or a spring-form tin. And you start off by mixing together the crushed biscuits and the butter and press those into your tin. And melt the chocolate. You can either do this in a double boiler, so that's a glass bowl over a pan of boiling water, taking care for the water not to touch the bowl. Or you can do it in a microwave, but if you're doing the microwave method, you do need to keep an eye on it because it can very quickly overcook. So you let that cool a little, and while that's happening, you put the cheese into a large bowl and beat it until it's soft. Add the sugar and beat it again until that's well mixed in, and then add the vanilla essence and the eggs one at a time. When you beat the eggs in, it will look as though it's going to curdle, but keep going because it will be fine. And then what you need to do is spoon half of the cheese mixture onto the biscuit crust and just sort of put it in blobs around. And then add the melted chocolate to the remaining cheesecake mix and stir it well. And then spoon dollops of that mixture in between the cake mix that's already on there and swirl the top around to give it a sort of pretty marbled effect. Mm. And then just pop that into the oven for about 30 minutes or until it becomes puffy around the edges but is still very soft in the centre. And then turn the oven off and leave the cheesecake in there to cool. And the temptation is just to get stuck in there, but you do need to let it chill well because it will still be quite squishy and gooey in the middle. And then just loosen the cheesecake from the sides of the tin. Use a palette knife, or you might want to line the tin before you pop it all in there, and serve that well chilled.
Now, getting back to Emma and her second recipe for us. Emma, would you like to regale us with your next recipe, please?
I'll regale away. Okay, this is a set cheesecake. It's kind of similar to the first one. It's a wee bit unusual as a set cheesecake because it doesn't have any gelatin in it. So, again, it's a chocolate one. It's a chocolate and peanut cheesecake. For the base, you need 125 grams of chocolate digestives, which you've crushed as before, and 25 grams of honey roasted peanuts, which you've also bashed up a wee bit, and 25 grams of butter. And for the topping, you need to start with 400 grams of cream cheese. There are a couple of different cream cheeses around. Because this one doesn't have any gelatin in it, you really do need to get one that's a wee bit firmer, or else it makes a great sort of sloppy dessert, but it doesn't set quite so well. That one's sometimes a wee bit more expensive, but it is on special this week, I found, to my joy. So you've got the cream cheese, 4 tablespoons of icing sugar, 225 grams of condensed milk, 100 grams of chocolate, and 2 tablespoons of peanut butter. So the method to start off is similar to the other one. You pop your biscuit crumbs and the peanuts and your melted butter into a bowl, mix them well, and press them into, I think I used a 23-centimetre tin for this one, and flatten it well. You do need to kind of flatten it and really compact it in there, otherwise it can kind of fall apart when you try and cut it. And then for the topping, you want to pop your cream cheese and your icing sugar into a bowl and beat it until it's smooth, and stir in the condensed milk. And as before, you dollop about half of this onto the top of your base, mm-hmm. leaving a few gaps. And then you melt your chocolate and stir in the peanut butter. And this is where I have a problem cooking it, because it's really difficult not to eat that bit and actually carry on with the recipe.
Yeah.
So you add the melted chocolate to the rest of your cheesecake mix and stir it well. And then dollop that in between the cheesecake mix that's already on there. And again, swirl the top to give it a pretty effect. And then you need to put that in the fridge, and you need to leave it set for at least 30 minutes. But if you can wait until the next day, that will be even better.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay, so that's a delicious couple of delicious options there, and hopefully you folks got that down. We're going to try and find a way to attach those recipes to the website, so that hopefully will happen over the next week or so once we figure out which buttons to push and how to do that. So, is there anything else you'd like to add, Emma, or are we
I'll promise to do something a wee bit healthier next time after these two.
You've been listening to the Interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7pm and Thursdays at 12:30pm. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.